Good morning.
Are we working?
Welcome to Community First. I'm really happy to see you. Happy Daylight Savings. So we've got a good panel for you this morning. I'll jump right into the introductions. So here we have three people at the heart of Community, and they're going to introduce themselves.
I guess I'm first, actually. Put this on so I can see you all. All right, so I'm Lagaya Tishi. I started out as a Yelp community manager in 2004 and pestered them until they gave me a job and started doing community there since 2005. I was one of the first non-technical employees, so I was number 10, which was an incredible experience to see it through 600 people. And then went to Airbnb, started out there quite early as well, and got to see the community progress, both the host and the traveler side. I am quite an evangelist about everything I do, so I was really, really grateful to have both of those opportunities. And now I'm advising for a couple of startups and excited to be on this panel. Thanks, guys.
Hey, good morning. My name is David Noel. I'm the community evangelist for a company called SoundCloud based in Berlin. SoundCloud is a social sound sharing platform, and I joined as one of the first 10 employees in 2009. When we had around 50,000 users, which grew up to this day to around 12 million users.
I'm Chrysanthi Tenentis. I did community at Outside In, a location-based startup that sold to Patch recently. I was there for over 3 years, and then I went to Foursquare in January 2010. When there were about 150,000 users, and we grew to over a million within a couple months. And I was there for over 2 years, and I'm actually phasing out through the end of this month and doing some advising and consulting before I announce my next step.
Great. And I'm Diana Kimball. I'm the moderator and currently a student at Harvard Business School, and also I have a distributed mentoring movement that is a community of its own. So. But there's one more person, actually a lot of people, it's all of you. So we feel like this is a room full of people who should probably know each other, so we wanted to do a little exercise. If you have started a company in the past year, could you stand up?
Wow, kudos to you guys.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, and if you are interested in getting into community management, could you stand up? Yeah, you can see that. and then if you're just here, curious, and wanting to learn more, could you stand up? Amazing.
All right.
Great. And if you all want to sit down and just say hi to your neighbors for like 60 seconds, I think that would be great.
So loud.
This is awesome. Guys, I'll pass the test. We're not leaving. We're gonna stay. Stand up. You know, let them know.
Okay, all right. Whoa. Okay, you guys, this is awesome. I hope these conversations continue, but let's move on. Okay. Thanks so much. That was way more awesome than I expected.
The sound was amazing.
adjust the volume up or down?
Just move the mic closer to your face.
Okay. Great. Better? Okay. Yeah? Okay. So before we get started, we wanted to just put three principles on the table that guide the way we think and the way we'd like to engage in this panel. So the first principle is that timeless stories are greater than timely tactics. We know that when you're getting into community management and you're running a company, what tools to use are always top of mind. But we feel that those tools, the best practices, are always changing, and we're more interested in what stays the same in community management over time. The second principle is build to last. Community is something that is so organic and human that If you build it just as a way of getting more users, if you're mercenary about it, it really is not. It's really not doing justice to the beautiful thing that a great community can be. So that's our second principle. And the third principle is born this way. I think that, you know, when you're thinking about who could be a good community manager, whether you could be a good community manager, it's so not about your number of followers or, you know, your facility with different types of social media or, you know, the number of emails you can write in a day. It's really about those most human characteristics, empathy, storytelling, listening. And those are what make a great community manager, and that's what you should be looking for in yourself and in the people that you bring onto your team as you get into community management. So, onto the panel. I'm going to leave this slide up with our Twitter handle so that you can tweet along the way if you'd like. And let's get started. Just for the first question, I was hoping that each of you could tell the story of how you joined your team, the latest team you were on, and the sort of first set of responsibilities you tackled.
Go first.
All right. So I'll speak to Airbnb. Airbnb is a website where you're able to rent accommodations from people like you and me. And as you guys probably know, for these type of peer-to-peer marketplaces, the first kind of barrier to entry is really trust. Like, is somebody going to walk out with my TV? How do I know that I feel secure about who these people are? The biggest concern that I had coming in was, like, who are these people? And how do I know what we can build for them that would really engage them and give them more security around other people that they were starting out with? So there's definitely a period of user research. So I like to do both quantitative and qualitative analysis around what the general sentiment is of the company, as well as, you know, like questions like, how would you rate our customer support from 1 to 5? But also things like what resonates most with you about the Airbnb experience. And so that gives you a good snapshot of what users are like in a way that is much more scalable. And then the focus groups are incredibly important. So meeting with people in real life. I feel like the type of feedback that people give you in a conversation is totally different than the type of things that they would email you about or that they would rant to customer service about. And having those type of conversations really early on to inform what you build in any future iterations is really crucial. So that was one of my first projects. Another thing that was quite important was really figuring out what people found rewarding and how to recognize them accordingly. So, you know, what drives people? What motivates them? Why do they like you? And then building an incentive structure, not a monetary one, but through recognition that makes them feel like a part of your movement. So that's Airbnb.
For SoundCloud, was Alex and Eric were very much inspired by Flickr in the early days. So Flickr, you know, defined community guidelines early on. Had a community manager, Heather Chambe, is one of the veterans in the field. And so inspired by that, they said, yeah, we have a core team of engineers and designers and have a product that users really love. And they said, you know, we truly believe that for the success and growth of a company, it's going to be driven by the people who use it and love it and talk about it. So we want to make a statement and create this position of a community manager early on, even before having, you know, more engineers or marketing or product managers or whatnot, and said, we really want to put somebody in place who has the interests of users at heart and can be the user's advocate inside of the company. I think that's really a decision to make as a founder, is to say, what is our biggest asset we have as a company, and to a lot of people that's the users and the interactions they have. So if you have a product where you call it a playground, right, and the nice, like the toys, the features where people can create a community themselves, you as a community manager come in, and then you enable people to form a community, and you're there for them to support them and engage with them.
And with Foursquare, I had been a pre-launch beta tester. So I had been using Foursquare every day for about 9 months, and Foursquare tweeted that they needed some help with community and support. And I knew Dennis and Naveen just from the tech scene in New York for a few years. And I emailed them and said that I could come in and help them hire the person they needed, because I was actually about to take a different job. And Dennis wrote back to me within 2 minutes saying that I should just come in and do it myself. And so we sort of negotiated back and forth, and I said I would come in for a few weeks. And then my first day in the office, we sat down, and he looked at me and he said, "You're going to stay, right?" And they had a huge backlog of support. There was a, basically, they had a Get Satisfaction forum that nobody was really moderating. And there was an external facing email that went to everybody on the team. So the first thing that I did was we switched that to not go to everyone in the team and instead go to Zendesk. And so I just set up everything for the incoming channels to scale, which we had to do really quickly after I joined.
Great. Yeah, I think that what I hear from that is that there are so many, you know, a community starts before you even have a community manager, and a lot of the community manager's role is to come in and make sense of that and shape it and be the touch point. And I think that the thesis of this panel is you should have a community manager from day one, before day one. And I think that even though each of you joined at some point after day one, you know, there was a big component of the founders of the company playing that role until you came in and really shaped it. And so I think that, you know, community management, as long as you, you know, as long as you have, if you have users, you have a community. And so it's something really important to pay attention to from day one. So my second question is, actually it starts with a story. So so I think that we've all talked about how one of the roles of a community manager is to be the most passionate user of the product and to be its most earnest advocate. And so I met David about a year ago. We became friends. We're actually staying in an Airbnb place together this time. And like yesterday morning, he'd gotten in the middle of the night, and I woke up and I was going to go out into the living room to say hi to him, and somehow we got to talking about SoundCloud API, and like he was just in bed, like looking at his phone, and then he looked up at me and he was like, "Diana, is there anything I can do to make your SoundCloud experience more wonderful?" And I love that, like even in his waking moments, first waking moments, the first thing he was thinking about was how to make my SoundCloud experience more wonderful.
That's the time to screen in the morning.
Yeah, exactly. So I was hoping that we could just talk a little bit about you know, stories of going above and beyond, whether yourselves or your teams, to really make that connection with the community and make that connection with the user's voice.
Yeah. Wow.
That's such a lovely story. Yeah. Well, I think that you just always have to have a pulse for what the community is thinking and feeling, and just try to gauge how you need to respond. And I mean, a lot of the stories that I think about are when there's some sort of drama or person who's really upset, and you know, that sort of encounter will always take so much more of your time than dealing with the people who are happy. But I think it's ultimately worthwhile to sort of just give that person the acknowledgement that they really need, that you understand what they're going through.
Yeah, I think the most revealing, like the best thing about this this role was you know, like Chrisanta, just jumping in into support and just working through the backlog. So we have amassed hundreds of emails that were unanswered from premium users, et cetera. So we really needed to organize this. And you have this sense of respect, like jumping into you know, a whole pool of communication with your users, and you're like, oh, what's, you know, what am I going to face there, right? And I think one of the things to learn early on is just to get in there and talk to your customers right away, because they will tell you amazing things. Either they will complain about something not working, which is good because it will help you fix things and move forward. But then you also have like these great stories that affect. It's real humans contacting you, and I don't know when's the last time you contacted a company for customer support, but try to remember how your experience was and to actually take the time to contact the company, especially a very young company where you still need to build this trust. You're spending time using the product. You're not sure about if this product will be around in a few weeks. So people take time to contact you and share their experiences with you, and that's the most amazing thing. So last week we received an email from a user called Marisica, who's told us a story that SoundCloud was a place for her to express herself during a time of illness. So she has a very rare illness, and the community that she built around herself on SoundCloud was the one thing that kept her alive. And when you receive an email like this, it's a really touching moment. And then you send it to the entire company. The one thing that is really important for us as well is just to make sure that, you know, while we grow and the user base grows, we always try to make sure that the rest of the company really gets to see these things, because that's it affects real people and real people's lives, and that's happening around the world, and that's the most amazing thing.
Yeah, I would almost preempt this question, even though the two of us have already answered it, but I think that probably everything that the three of us do in any given day with interactions with individual users, or when we're building up site copy or FAQs or communication to the whole community, I think that we're always thinking about it and going above and beyond, because we believe in the interaction of, you know, the community and the company and the community amongst themselves. And I think we actually have a great story like that about somebody who had chronic fatigue syndrome, who wrote to us very early on at Foursquare and talking about how her family and friends knew how she was feeling because they knew if she was going out or home for the day. And it was a way for her to connect with people, and she became one of our strongest super users. And it was a story that we would always forward around to our team, so that people understand that different users have vastly different use cases, and, you know, our product development was as important for her as it was for somebody who's going out.
That is such an interesting point, because the one thing that defines community is it doesn't really matter what type of use case people have, because you get as excited about the really tiny email from, you know, a person in Indonesia and a, you know, big company using your product or whatever it is. And I think if you get into the job thinking embracing all use cases equally, then it's a good way to make a good job.
Yeah, one thing I'm hearing here is that a big role of community management is serving as the user's voice within the company as you scale, as one of you said. And I was wondering if you could just talk a little bit more about that, because I think it's extremely crucial.
Yeah.
Can I actually speak to the point before this?
Absolutely.
I think you guys spoke about, you know, sort of more proactive communication and really going above and beyond, and something that that I've learned, you know, over the years has been how to embrace crisis and see that as an opportunity for really building a company voice and, you know, in a way it kind of tests the integrity of the company, but I think it is our moment to say, this is what defines us as a company, these are the values that really matter to us, and to communicate that in a very authentic way. You know, I think there's a sort of feeling about kind of listening and acknowledging people's concerns when things may go awry, and then being able to you know, take responsibility for making proactive changes that gives people more trust in your brand. So, you know, I think a lot of folks have talked about, like, what happens if, you know, there's some brand damage if something goes down. And, you know, there was talk about this at Yelp when, like, people were saying, oh, well, people are writing, you know, all these bogus reviews, which turned out not to be true. But I think as long as you are able to speak to that and not shy from those, so it's difficult conversations, there is a real opportunity to build trust with your users. So I would encourage everyone to keep having those conversations.
Yeah.
That's probably the heart of community, and maybe the point where community and marketing may differ. That
right.
We sort of embrace that kind of moment that is... Yeah.
Yeah, and it can be very gratifying when people come back and acknowledge that you know, you just took it head on, rather than kind of push it to the side.
We actually had a DDoS attack a couple of months ago. For those of you who don't know what this is large packages of traffic that get sent maliciously to your site in order to bring it down. So we went down for a few hours and didn't really know what was happening. And the only thing we could do with all the shitstorm going on out there was just to get into the trenches and really try to let people know that we were on top of things. And once we could confirm that it was a DDoS attack, we went out there and really transparently said, okay, we're on a DDoS attack. We don't know when it's going to be fixed, but we're working really hard on doing this. And at that moment when we went out with the truth, people, the mood entirely flipped and on email and on Twitter and everywhere. And that was a really crucial moment because it also formed, internally, it really formed a community inside of the company because we were all aligned, everybody was really aligned on the same message of saying, okay, let's decide to go out there and talk about it because it's the only way we can gain back that trust that we might have lost because of the downtime. So in total, we were down 24 hours. And the next day, I went up to Alex, our CEO, and said, like, hey, do you want to talk about what happened? And I put the iPhone app in his, SoundCloud app in his face, and he just took 2 minutes to really explain what happened. It was a really heartfelt, unscripted message, and that we sent to our user base. And the response was phenomenal. People were really like, oh, you really took the time to explain what happened, and that's really awesome.
Yeah, right. I think that's such a valid point because community is all about relationships. Your company's relationship to your users and the relationships that those users build amongst each other. And just like any relationship, communication is so key. And people just want to hear the truth. They want you to be straightforward. They want transparency. And that always gets much better reactions than trying to sugarcoat anything.
And it's the hardest part because how do you, you feel, you take stuff so personal because you're so committed to the company. And when you have people complaining, you're like, oh, whoa, what's going on? But it's
it
not
hurts.
True.
It
hurts. It really hurts. But getting to the trenches and then really like confronting the situation is really worthwhile because that's where we really learn about what's happening. It's not the fun stuff and the great stories are super great. They're really important. But as a company, you really learn from the failures and how you respond to them, how quickly you respond to them, and how authentic you respond to them.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to re-ask the last question?
Yeah. Oh,
sorry, we got totally off topic.
I feel like I'm learning as much listening. The question was about the role of community manager as representing the user's voice within the company and how that relates to the product team potentially.
Mm-hmm. Well, based on something that Etsy does. I was on a panel with Dave Brown, who was formerly with Etsy. Is he here? No? Okay. But they do a company-wide support program. So I set this up at Foursquare, where everyone from Dennis, Nameen, BizDev, product, engineers, client team, everyone would come and sit with my team and for an hour go through support tickets, and we just felt like this was a way to really keep people in touch with the way that our users were interacting with Foursquare and the way that they were talking about Foursquare, and we found this to be amazingly valuable, and we collected feedback from everyone on the team after they would have their shifts, and we had a lot of people ask to do it much more often than they were scheduled to do it, and it was just really exciting to see people from our team who are already so passionate about the product, but to really connect with users and have that one-on-one communication with them, and right away either build us an admin feature that we were lacking because Harry realized we should never have to deal with that kind of problem that he was seeing 4 times in an hour. And I think that feedback loop is ultimately so valuable. We also would do something similar whenever we were launching a new feature. The product manager who was leading would set up a document with our team, and we would break down positive feedback, negative feedback, points of question, and bugs. And then that was a way to really identify how people were feeling about what the new feature was, and just sort of looping it back directly to the people who are building it.
So at the beginning of Sankar, when I joined, we were all sitting around the same table, so we were less than 10 people. So it was relatively easy to launch a feature. So we were launching features almost every day. We were also scaling, so we had transcoding backlogs and all that stuff that annoys people. But releasing features and then receiving the feedback immediately was good because you could talk, scream around the office and say like, hey, something's broken, something's down, and somebody would go and okay, let's fix it. And while you grow, it becomes a little bit more complex because you start having like dedicated teams and a product roadmap, etc. So for us, at the beginning, it was interesting to recognize patterns out there and see. And to weigh feature requests and needs that the community had, because the one thing you learn as a community manager is the many. I'm going to call it the many faces of a no. So you will learn many different ways of saying no, because there's so much value in feature requests. But at the same time, you want to stay focused as a company with a team of 10 people. So, but you want to recognize the right IDs. And so in order for the product team to make the right decisions, it's always good to kind of recognize the different patterns. And it's a very volatile thing. So it's a seasonal thing. So we saw feature requests bumping up an entire month and then going down, then back up again. So recognizing these things and then packaging them in a way that they become actionable within your roadmap is really something that I would give advice on, because you can't do everything and you shouldn't do everything. You should say no. You should say it in a very nice way and explain the reasoning behind that. Take the time to explain why it's not. You probably won't be able to do it. And then later on, once you grow, it becomes much more complex to get the main issues on people's desks. So you need to find the right ways and a culture of feedback within the communities within the company, so people still feel the connection to the community.
So there is always a complex relationship between product teams and marketing and community folks, I think. But something that I learned pretty early on, actually didn't know at first and then painfully learned, was that the community is very, very vocal about them loving your product and being so excited, and then let me tell you what went wrong. Let me tell you what doesn't work. Like, that's their second sentence. Don't be discouraged by that. I think they're also going to say, here are all of my problems, and this is how you can fix them. And so my rookie mistake was to take all of those product suggestions and go to the product team and say, hey, guys, this is what you need to build. And they were just like, are you kidding me? So the nugget of the story here is allow the product team to solve those puzzles themselves. There are a million different solutions to one problem. And taking the creativity out of it for the engineers is taking the very reason for them to be breathing and wanting to hack on this stuff, right? If you just tell them, and sometimes users aren't super product savvy. They don't really know what the best features are, but they come up with a solution, and that's what they present to you. So I just started to keep a list of everything and then really put tally marks and say, okay, well, this one is the pattern. This is how it emerged, and then present it as a possible solution, but not to say, hey, guys, you need to build this for us. And that change in attitude and allowing them to be part of that problem solving completely changed the dynamics of our relationship. So I don't know, maybe tactical, but also informative.
I think it's both things, right? If you bring users on into that equation, and then people on a product team, and then you release a feature, and then users come back and say, "Amazing that you built this," and it's both owned it, right? The engineer and the product person and the community owned that feature. They've created it.
Oh, another thing: when you guys are getting on these sort of early adopters that are really, really passionate, give them a job, give them a task. I think the best one is to form a little group of beta testers, because they get the sneak peek, the VIP access to all the new features, and they're forgiving when it doesn't work because they want that sort of exclusive in. And people feel really special when they get to see stuff before it's released, into the wild. So take advantage of those folks that really want to dig their hands in.
And that's interesting because it's almost like you trusting the users as they trust you. So it makes the trust go two ways, that you would trust them with something before it's public. Cassandra, do you have any, does the super user community for Foursquare serve any role like that?
Well, the super users have a bunch of tools that are unique to them. So we're always rolling out new jobs for them to do because they help maintain the venue database. And some of our most engaged and passionate super users do have really great feature ideas for what they need to help us. And so we set up a Google group to communicate with them, to let them know when anything was changing, and then they would let us know if anything broke on their end, some small sort of anomaly that we wouldn't have thought of. So it was a very symbiotic relationship and really helpful because they pay such close attention to every part.
That's true.
And really, they just loved knowing. They love like hearing what is about to happen and knowing that they have a direct line back to us.
Absolutely. Yeah.
This is great. So we realized this morning that when we submitted this panel, we promised that we'd answer a set of questions, and then we totally forgot about answering those. So I thought I'd bring those back in and just quickly run down the list. So question number one, does my company need a community manager?
Can I answer this one?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you have users? If you have users, then I would recommend that you have a community manager.
Great.
Well, I mean, it really does depend on the company, and I would venture yes, you probably do, but you should think about, do you have users? Do you have customers? And then you'll really understand how to tailor your community manager.
I need a community manager. What qualities do I look for, and where do I start?
Empathy.
Authenticity. Do they have passion for what you're doing? Is that contagious when you talk to them?
Yeah, passion, understanding, enthusiasm.
Enthusiasm, absolutely.
Great communication skills.
And great writing skills, probably.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Good call.
Written communication.
Mm-hmm.
How do you grow a community management team?
I think that's a really interesting problem to solve because it depends on where the community team lives within your organization. But as I was scaling our team, I always thought of having really complementary skills and thinking about how the team would ultimately scale and siloing off different sort of sections of what our whole team did and thinking about the way that it would ultimately grow and what we would need, 6 months and a year, thinking about when are you going to internationalize, when are you going to localize, what sort of admin features will you need ultimately. But definitely the rapport within our team is so important because you need to be supporting each other. It can be a really hard job to receive a lot of negative feedback nonstop, so you definitely need somebody who's positive. And I just think being able to complement each other's skills are really important.
Could I speak to that one? So I think, use your own resources that are at your disposal. I think the best recruiting pool are your most authentic, most passionate users, and those should be the folks that build up your community team. Something that I've realized has been successful in the past is really promoting from within rather than bringing in folks that haven't been in the trenches to promote leads and managers that have gone through all of the ranks from answering those first tickets to really engaging with people offline as well. I think another question, this one is a little bit more open-ended, how do you grow a team? But a more strategic question is, and of course depending on the product, Do you go for local community managers? Do you go for geographically targeted community managers in markets that you want to grow? Or do you centralize the approach and run it all from HQ and then just focus on, all of these different areas every month, every quarter, whatever it might be? And I don't think that there's a set answer for that, but it's a good approach to take and good questions to ask yourself. Is it going to behoove us to have people be able to trust these community managers as being evangelists and being folks that are in their hometowns that are also using their products to, say, for Airbnb, we're an American company. And when we went into, several of these last European countries, we just opened 5 offices in February. We're not regarded so well in some places as Americans, so we needed to build community folks that spoke French, that lived in Paris for the last decade, that were from the south of France, that had credibility. And that street cred goes a long way for people feeling comfortable with your brand. So, again, this is something that we should think about when figuring out who these folks should be, that they should reflect all of the different facets of your user base.
More specifically, I always look for liberal arts majors. Because I think that you need to have a natural problem solver and somebody who can think beyond what they think the problem is. Because a lot of times, users don't actually know what their problem is. And you have to sort of pull from them and extract what actually is happening. And then, when you're sort of transferring that information to the product team, you have to be able to really explain what the experience is that's happening. So
it's almost like you need to be able to close read emails.
Yeah, totally. I think a difference... Yeah. Can we keep going? A difference between Yelp and Airbnb for me was the sort of demographic of all of our users. There's a lot of hosts in certain markets that are over 55 years old whose homes have been vacated because their kids have gone to college. And if you're having community managers interact with them every day, they have to be able to identify with these people. So I think in the beginning I had this sort of very set profile. That it would be an extroverted personality, that would be somebody that, that really enjoys engaging with people, that somebody that obviously can speak to the product very well. But that what that person looked like, what that person did every day, really depended on who the people were that they were interacting with. They're a reflection of the sort of constituency in these different areas. And if they can't identify with all of these folks, they aren't going to be successful. So, again, it's really helpful for having them, rise up from the community itself.
Yeah, for us, we went from a generalist approach to now, as we grow, to a more specialist approach. So we brought 5-6 people on and been working with them for the past 1.5 years, I would say. And so we required to them to balance both areas, so both the support stuff and then also more outreach projects. And while we grow, it's become a little bit more complex in terms of keeping up with everything. So we're now transitioning into separate, breaking down into two groups, one support and one outreach. And I think when looking at candidates, it's a bit tricky because I've learned to disregard resumes entirely. It's such a nice way of just selling yourself for more than you are. So what I like to see is people jumping in and saying, "Here I am. Here's how I can add value." They really took the time to learn what you're about, what your voice is at the company, what your mission is, how they can contribute, how they're going to contribute. I think this is the stuff you want to look for because you don't want to you don't want to have people who are looking for. Necessarily for a next career move, you want to have people who want to jump in and really get things done, and that in full alignment with the company. So most of the people I brought on a team, they didn't have any background in community before or any background in marketing or any background in as a communications specialist. It's really like you said, you go look for people who have this odd background that are interesting and excite you, right? And that's a bit of the hard way of really like finding these people. It's a long process, but it's totally worth it to take your time when you look at people. Don't say I need a community manager and take the next one. Really like make sure that it's somebody who can grow into the company and really take it help take it to the next level.
Hey, okay, one more question, then we'll move to Q&A from the audience. So how do you find your voice as a company?
That's a good one.
That's a good question. I think that the founders probably said that. When I first started and I was writing blog posts, I would go back and read Dennis's really early emails to beta testers and his blog posts that were just his own sort of stream of consciousness. And so I would read a bunch of those to sort of get into that voice because that was sprinkled all through the app itself. And I think that just being really true to what the product is about and why it was created and what problem it's trying to solve is, you know, speaking to just staying true to that and not necessarily thinking about who's actually using it. You just want to be really authentic to what the initial vision is.
I think so too. The founders have a voice. They build a product. The product has a characteristic. It has a voice. And once you, the founder, decide to hand over that voice, which is a very, you know, reflecting on it with Alex and Eric 3 years later, we had a conversation where we talked about this, and it was, so Eric, he admitted that it was a really, really hard decision for them to give this away, this voice, because you're, as a founder, you want to control what the company does and how the product feels and what it does. And how you talk to users. So giving this away was a really big step for both founders with us. But I think it's really then the process of finding that person who you trust can take this voice, to the outside world. And so when Alex and I started to talk about the position, it took 4 to 6 weeks before he made a decision. And we really worked every Saturday at 1 p.m. We met for lunch and. He made me work on stuff and work on challenges and tasks, and then he said, "Okay, let's try it out." And it's not set, but we're going to try it out. And after 3 months, he said, "Okay, that's actually working out."
So an exercise that we did to try and kind of determine our own voice for the community team was to write a little credo or like a community manifesto, so to identify our values. And figure out, you know, what's important to us. And then that really sets the tone for all of your interactions. So, you know, one of ours is to kind of be scrappy and be creative. Another one is to always be kind. And I think even if somebody is coming to you like, this doesn't work and this is terrible, and you guys need to fix this and how could you do this, to really approach it in a way that you would treat a friend is just a generally good approach.
We always envisioned my aunt, who is a huge Foursquare user, and she lives in the suburbs of Boston, and she's like a 55-year-old soccer mom. Actually, baseball mom, but it's pretty close. And so, you know, you think about that person, you think about like the college student in the Midwest, and you just try to speak to all of those people at the same time.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, it's a tough challenge to not alienate folks if you may take a certain tone. We realized that, you know, we were playing around with this kind of snarkiness at one point, and we realized it was kind of off-putting for, you know, for a certain demographic. Like, they loved it and they ate it up, but other folks said it was a little offensive at times. You never want to toe that line. That was a Yelp, by the way. So, you know, take it for what you will. But just have an understanding of who these people are and then speak to those people. Persona studies, I don't know if you guys do those, but doing personas for user research, just having an idea of who these people are when you're crafting your documents. And then having a gatekeeper for all of the documents that go out. So, you know, in the past, we sort of segmented different things, and each different person wrote a bunch of kind of like more templatized things. There should always be somebody that filters all of those at the end and makes sure that it's in line with one voice so that there's not a whole bunch of things going out with all of these kind of like mixed tones and mixed messaging.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that something we've talked a lot about as a group is just that a community manager has this interesting dual role as the voice of the company to users and the voice of the users to the company. So translating that and just being just a hardcore listener is like the top most important skill in a lot of ways. And, a hardcore communicator on the other side as well. So at this point, I'd like to open it up for questions if you want to queue behind the microphone.
All right. Hi.
Hi.
Hey.
Hello.
All right. Go for
it. Hi. I'm Alicia. I am the social media and community manager, team of one, for a Boston-based health startup. And we have 2,000 users right now, but we have partnerships coming up that could scale to the millions. And being the team of one, like right now I'm working with a product manager to evaluate the support infrastructure. It's kind of get satisfaction here, Zendesk there. We're really trying to centralize it to tie into our CMS or purchase a CMS that will do all these facets that we need, from chat to phone support, email to a feedback forum or support loop, kind of, you know, for ideas, because we want those ideas keep coming in, but we want to service the support, like, I didn't get my email, I'm not earning my points. So I guess, what do you suggest? Like, we're currently looking at all kinds of providers, from OLARC to a Zendesk replacement, because we're not completely satisfied with Zendesk, and we're getting rid of Get Satisfaction altogether. So do you have any insights into what you use, how you tie this all integratively together?
Yep.
No. So, yeah, that's,
to make my job, like,
it's such an important question. It's a lot of pressure as one person to figure that all out. I think I think that falls in the timely tactics category, but if you want to come up afterward, I think we'd be happy to take
that.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Hi, I'm John, and I'm actually a product manager. So I had I heard a good point that you guys made about community managers taking requests from users and figuring out, you know, what they need from the product. And you talked about, I think you talked about prioritization of those before you hand them off to the product teams.
Certainly.
So how do you guys feel, how important do you think that is, and then what kind of techniques do you recommend for that? Because it is nice to have a list prioritized before we start development. So.
Definitely.
Yeah, Go ahead. I think if you're...
I'll just start.
Such an interesting point.
Well, go ahead.
No, it's a really, really great question. I mean, I think that talking about how, you know, we're born this way, I think that judgment and prioritization are so key to what we do, because you can't just listen to the loudest voice, because you will, you know, if you have a user base of 15 million users, you could have 20 million opinions. And it's always understanding the, you know, like, cost-benefit analysis of bang for buck on a feature. But, it, you know, judgment is something that you can't really learn or teach. You know, you just have to kind of grow into it.
Yeah, can I speak to that technique? So normally what we would do is we would have a list of all of them and then get some engineer that we were friendly with to add a column for difficulty. Like, how long would this take and how difficult is this to build? And that allowed us to help, you know, sort of prioritize those, knowing what the type of resources we were asking for. So it's a really simple system, but honestly, it completely changed things, because then we acknowledged what their involvement was. And then we had, you know, endorsed by one of our engineers saying, like, yeah, I want to build this. This is great. So
cool. Thanks.
Yeah.
Sorry. Did you want to say
something?
No, it's fine.
Hi, I'm Mel. I'm a community manager, and I think when I was starting, you know, it was just myself and one other community manager, so we both were kind of doing everything. And as we're looking at growing our team, the question is, you know, how do we keep things consistent, specialize in things, but still be able to mix things up, because it can be so draining to do support all day long.
True.
And the question I have is, you know, how do you divide up support? I mean, for example, like, by time, or do you have a couple people who rotate off days? Because, you know, you've got the Zendesk inbox full of tickets, and how do you parcel them out?
Yeah. Do you guys want to speak to that?
Well, the way I know that Kickstarter has a massive volume of incoming requests, and they, instead of having everybody always working on Zendesk, they have a day on, so that you have one day where it's you're just in Zendesk, and then the other days you're sort of doing other tasks. We did something a little bit different. My team was really excited by the idea of a star chart, like when you're a kid and you have little gold foil stickers. We each had a color, and because we had so many admin queues and different channels, so it just was really helpful for everybody to know, okay, today I am focusing on this, this, and this, and I know that this other person is handling these other things. So I really think it depends on the breakdown of the personality of your team and the way that they want to do it, but I do absolutely recommend breaking up that Zendesk burden, because, I mean, I remember when it was just me and I was dreaming in green in Zendesk.
Yeah, that's true. Use those tags. I would say specialization as you guys scale will be really important, because then it will be more efficient for people. So if they've got, you know, for Airbnb, like taxes and regulation is you know, a huge subset of our tickets. To have people, you know, well-versed in all of those issues makes it much more quick, and they feel ownership around a particular topic. And then you can build out the team that way. Another thing that works well is to incorporate people into your offline type of meetups or events so that they get to meet users. So it's not just the kind of reactionary, this is what we're doing for you, this is what we fixed. They get the kind of like goodwill, that kind of warm and fuzzy feeling when they get to meet people in real life. So it's always a nice emotional balance too.
Make it a thing. And we do Backlog Wednesdays, where we have as many people as we can just jumping in and making it a thing. With at the end of the day, we celebrate this.
Thank you.
Hello, Dimitri Vitsa with StoryAmp. It's a platform for connecting record labels with journalists. And our audio is powered by SoundCloud, so when the denial of service attack happened, it was right around the time we launched. So we followed you.
I'm sorry about that.
That's not your fault.
It wasn't us.
I know. I think it was some Russians. But we followed your Twitter account, which was useful. Then we found, I think it was a user-generated thing called issoundclouddown.com. And now we check that instead.
Every slide has this.
It's a great tool, a user-generated tool. But actually, my question is totally different, though. When I think about community, I don't totally think about it in terms of reactive terms, and I feel like the conversation has mostly been about reacting to community, and I'm curious if you have some, and maybe I just don't, as an early stage startup, maybe I don't understand what community is in this context, but I'm wondering if you have some innovative stuff that you've tried for engaging community rather than reacting to community, whether that's a separate marketing function or something like that. But I'd love to hear, like, what were the coolest things you've done as community managers to, like, rally the community, bring in more people, create conversation around your product and services, just, you know, the cool stuff.
Yeah.
We do something called SoundCloud of the Day. That's a brand thing now within the community. So every day we select somebody who's contributed in a very substantial way in the community. So they've been on board, they've learned a product, they've formed connections, meaningful connections, they've built a little community around themselves. So we recognize them, we bump into them every day. We have a huge backlog, a huge queue of interesting people. So what we do, we just elevate them within a community and say, hey, look at this person. You probably have never heard of this person, but this person does amazing things and you should know about them. And so we've been doing this for, I think we have 450 SoundCloud of the Day, so 450 days now we've done this. And it's just an amazing thing. It's such a simple way of just, you know, posting out, elevating somebody, recognizing something. We sent them a personalized audio message announcing that we nominated them. And it's become like this internal brand within the community where everybody's waiting for it every day. And everybody goes out there and says, like, yes, great pick, really great, finally her, finally him. So that's, it's simple things like that that are very native to your community. You will figure it out. I didn't start on the first day saying, oh, we're going to do this. But it's something that, you know, you start to place little dots, and then at some point they connect into a line.
Can I tell a story and a little anecdote? So I think the coolest thing that I've ever done with community was at Yelp. We went to the Chabot Space Center in Oakland, California, and they had a really amazing telescope, and we had a night for the Yelp elites that was, you know, space-themed. It was called Space Odyssey. I'm kind of a sci-fi geek. So everyone was wearing all these crazy costumes, and we were walking around this sort of Smithsonian, endorsed museum, and got to see the discovery of one of these, like, little meteors. And that was super cool. So, I think, just to break it down a little bit, those kind of proactive elements, I think if you think about what community provides for people in real life, why do people want to be a part of community? It's to get a sense of belonging. Yeah. It's that you share something with people that also, I think, have particular interests, and what that develops into are real relationships that enrich their lives. And that always starts with celebration. It always starts with this fun little spark of like, yes, we're doing something great together and we're having a blast, and let's have a real conversation after this. So I would always encourage everyone to just, with those initial sort of points of contact, not so much like, hey, tell me about what's going wrong and what's going right, but like, you're part of this, let's have fun together. And it really opens up the doors for any type of interaction.
Cool. Great, thanks.
Try to rush through more questions.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Liza, and I actually work for Scripps Networks. So I've been with, I started out doing community management with RecipeSar.com about 7 years ago. It's 100% user-generated content recipe site. And I don't know if this is the appropriate time to plug it, but we're now food.com, and we're looking for a community manager. So if anyone wants to give me their card afterwards, I'm game. But my question to you guys is, I fell into the community management job because there was four of us and someone needed to do it. And I understand how valuable the community is, and I have a lot of great relationships. Community is king for our site, but I don't think I was born this way. And kind of like a dental hygienist, you know, like their hands eventually wear out. Like there's an expiration date, how many years you can do it. Even though you guys think are born this way, do you ever think that like there is an expiration date on being a community manager? Like you finally can't take it anymore?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of outbound, right? You're always engaging with people. You're always interacting with people. And you know, every person is a balance of an introvert and an extrovert. There's always some little introverted part that gets neglected when you're constantly surrounded by people. So I think it's a lifestyle question. Like, can you balance all of the time that you spend with people and take a bath and read a book? And you'll find that you have to sort of, like, you know, rejuvenate yourself a little bit.
Yeah, you have to learn this. It's really a hard process.
Yeah,
it's really difficult. I'm still trying to figure this out after 3 years.
Yeah.
It's not easy.
Thanks.
Great, thanks.
We'll talk about that after. Find me after.
Yeah.
I will help with that.
We have time for one more question. So.
Hi. Okay. My name's Amit, and my question's for Ligaya. Earlier, you mentioned that the biggest barrier was trust with your company.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if it was concerns that were generally applied to the entire community, or if it was segmented by demographics or regions where there's different community or security concerns.
Good question. So we have a two-sided marketplace that involves hosts and travelers.
Right.
And it's more, the concerns are more on the host side. So who's going to be sleeping in my bed?
Right.
Is one of the major concerns. But we can talk about that after,
okay,
too.
Cool.
And, I mean, do we have time for
one
more
if I
answer
that
quickly?
Yeah, that was very quick, so.
I'll talk to you later.
Yeah. This kind of follows on a little bit from the previous question. I was doing community management for online gaming for about 6 years, and what you're talking about in terms of enduring it on an ongoing basis. Previously, you were saying that the requirements were empathy, understanding, prioritization, etc. Do you not think that there's also a need for an appropriate level of detachment from the product? Because I've also recruited several people from within my own community, and gaming communities are very passionate.
Mm.
And they can be extremely difficult. And I've had some people who've been amazing, and yet other people who've also come from the community who've not been able to separate themselves and balance the needs of the business with the people
as
well.
Right, right. That's a really good point. Yeah, go ahead.
We've had this experience. So, you know, when we put up jobs for, you know, positions on a community team, we have tons of users who apply for it. But it's not always the best decision to make, because they know the product and the use case in a very specific way, and they love it, and it's great, and it should remain that way. So we try to, behind the scenes, we work really hard to try and make it look very easy to the outside world, but it requires a lot of work. There's sometimes we found a disconnect between the perception of what we do and what it actually means. So that's as opposed to you guys, I haven't had really good experiences with that so far. Was this on?
I think what it comes down to is critical thinking. And in that interview process, to see if the person is able to, really question their own assumptions about what they think that the product needs. I think people come in with a whole slew of features, and they're like, this is what you guys should be doing. And as you get deeper into that interview process, have them interview with people that are outside of your team to really test their analytical prowess, to test their you know, product sense or whatever it might be. And that will tell you if they're all around good fit or if they're just a passionate user. I mean, I think we're talking about the foundation and not the rest of their skill set. So that shouldn't be the only thing that you look for. And you're right, sometimes it's hard to see the forest from the trees. I think we've definitely seen that. But I'll talk to you later.
Yeah, we have to wrap up.
We're
going
to have
thanks so much, guys.
Thank you guys so much. We'll see you soon. Good luck.